You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
Welcome, everybody, to Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. And for this episode, we have Avery R. Young out of Chicago. And boy, he does a lot of great art, spoken word, poetry, music. I wanted to read a foreword to his recent book called Neckbone. And the foreword is by Viaster Gates. Who's another great artist. And this is the foreword to Neckbone. One of my earliest memories of going to church is the way Deacon Bond would bend on one knee and begin to slowly and in chant recite, "Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed would be thy name." As a young person, my friends and I would mock him, reciting his chant with all his emotion, mimicking his hand gestures and facial expressions. Deacon Bond had the responsibility of singing or speeching the Lord's Prayer every Sunday without fail. He, like so many others in the church, had a way of being devout. Their ability to embody both the spiritual life and the lyrical life demonstrated a relationship with Christ in the eternal that can be described as a romantic one. When I reflect on my experience at New Cedar Grove Missionary Baptist Church, located on the west side of Chicago, I believe this was a place where Jesus was a friend to the west side and to west siders. It is at this kind of place that we meet Avery R. Young. I reflect on the ways in which spiritual power is transferred to us and how often that spiritual power is a power residing in the absence of any other kind of power. That transference is amazing. Avery has been given that power, translated into a poetic power. It is with and through his power that Avery is able to ask poetry to perform the severe act of telling that the complicated stories of loss, suffering, and subjugation while cultivating stories of food, dance, and clothing, as well as black hair on black streets. While Avery touts often that this is a black poem, even if he never used the word black in his poems, they would still be blacker than most of ours. Avery not only knows but embodies blackness because blackness has been his gift. It's been his endowment. I know where this talent comes from, and it is not from theories on timbre or cadence structure. Avery is from the Lord, and he is from the endowment of blackness that is so deep and wide that I worry not of its depletion, because every day with this talent, Avery is adding more and more. As you read this book, recognize that you're not just reading one of our greatest living street poets or one of the most important thinkers on the black experience, but you're reading about yourself. Allow yourself to step into Avery's words, to be moved by his spirit and other spirits. Give yourself permission to write and breathe and raise your knee and move the mic up and down. Out of the many lessons bestowed upon me by Deacon Bond, one of great significance was teaching me how to believe, and that my belief required my breathing, and that my breathing would make room for the righteous. And so, in the spirit of Deacon Bond, keep breathing, Avery.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's a heck of an intro.
Yeah, you hooked it up.
Tell us.
Grateful for that forward.
Yeah. Avery R. Young. Welcome to Something Rather Than Nothing podcast. Tell us. That was from the intro from Neckbone.
Yeah,
which is a beautifully bound collection of visual verses. Can you just tell the listeners about, you know, what you're doing in that volume? What visual verses are?
Okay, well, visual verses, coined by my editor from Northwestern University Press, Parnisha Jones. It's really my attempt of communicating poetry as being art in some way, around the line. A lot of it becomes this thing about work literary work being viewed more as academic and not just an exploratory and not more so an exploration of a person's imagination. So what I wanted to do with Neckbone Visual Verses is really be transparent about the ways in which I see the poems. And put that in the working on page. So that's what Neckbone Visual Verses is really all about. These moments and that have happened in my life that has informed what I am doing with my work. And for me, my work is about my journey to, one, liberate myself and then stay liberated. I hope that answers the.
It certainly does. One of the comments I wanted to make on the volume that I appreciated for what it is that there seems to be a lot of open-ended questions and juxtapositions, visually and with words. And I think it opens up a lot of territory to think about it. I know sometimes if you grab a volume, everybody's going to have a different way of interacting with art. But if you grab a volume of poetry, it might just be looking for it to be, something that's soothing and melodic. Mm-hmm. But it can also, with the visual components of your poetry, it tends to open up a lot of questions for exploration. It's kind of like the beginning of thinking, and that evocative nature of it is something that I noticed right off the bat. Avery, going a little bit back, you talk about some of the moments of the development in the book. One of the basic questions I have is, what were you like when you were younger? Did you find yourself attracted to words, attracted to art and images when you were younger?
Yes, I've always been attracted to photography, photography and music since a baby, or images. Poetry came into my life around 8 when I learned that I could kind of articulate what I was feeling through verse. And I'm just very studious kid, but also was mischievous in ways and like just full of life, loved being inside the pageantry and gesture of service, even if I was a little bit more resistant of the dogma of religion and religious practice. And I was just always thinking and asking questions. Always fascinated with the way in which people spoke and dressed and presented themselves, in this world, So that was me as a kid, singing and dancing, playing, and just a bunch of, just a bunch of that.
Yeah, I think you should have that for quote in one of your books, mischievous in ways. That sounds very cryptic. Very open-ended.
No. You know, the funny thing is, my thing about the poetry and what I wanted to actually really do, and that thing is, it's like life doesn't happen left to right, So a lot of these poems question the way in which you can even enter a poem, So the access and the exit from many of those poems are very different.
Yes.
So sometimes you have to turn the book around in order to read it. Sometimes you have to pull it away from you. Sometimes you have to dig in it. Some of the words are legible, some of the words are not. This is, all of that is intentional because even as a little kid, I was very physical with things. Like TV, watching TV for me, depending on the show would be, depending on what the show was, would kind of inform my physicality while watching. So like, for instance, Soul Train was not a show that I just sat down and looked at. Soul Train is a show that I danced while watching.
Right.
Because there was music on Soul Train. There was music that, you know, I was grooving to. So that is the... there is, whenever we were watching maybe a broadcast of, we used to watch the Fellowship Baptist Church had a broadcast every Saturday night. And it wasn't just us sitting in on couches and on floors just watching people have church. It was really us saying amen and clapping hands and singing along with the choir. So that's kind of like, if that gives you any more clarity on
where things get
mischievous. When I was saying mischievous, I've always just been hands on. Like, I don't know the fire is hot until I put my hand on the fire.
Yeah, right. Right, you got to get into it.
I was not the child that you could say, that's hot. I was like, what? No, it's not. Yeah. And then I would go, oh, yes, it is.
Recall that. You know, you mentioned Soul Train. I said, great show. I got sidetracked for years. I'm still been sidetracked because I'd watched the clips. And I'll always be trying to figure out how Michael Jackson does the robot with his feet. He's moving those feet up and down, and he's going all back and over. I would have done the same thing, but I've always been trying to figure out his damn technique of how the heck he does that. I still don't know. To this day. One of the things I wanted to chat about, Avery. Obviously we chatted a little bit about Neckbone, your volume of visual verses that came out last year, but some of your other material, you do a lot of things, that I encountered with music was Tubman, and that album. First of all, I love it. I love the deep soul resonances in it. It's great, moving spiritual music. Get your body moving. Absolutely. How did it come about? And what are you looking to do? What are you trying to convey in your album Tubman?
So Tubman is basically the soundtrack to Neckbone, and there are the songs on Tubman, are meant to extend some of the poems, if not all the poems, in the book Neckbone. I recorded it. I was recording Neckbone as I was writing the book too. So I wanted to really just to create, my thoughts about the music too would be that there'd be these songs that would the arrangements of the songs would kind of reflect the music that I grew up listening to. You know, so that's where you have that nod to soul and funk and gospel, because this was all of the music that was playing, and that the music on that record was the type of music that was playing in the house as I was growing up. As a, you know, as a child on the west side of Chicago. So, you know, when you have a song like Sit Down Job, it reflects the relationship that I had with one of the pivotal characters in the book, Mother Mary or Big Mama. You know, and that's what, you know, when I was young, that's what she told me, you need to get you a sit down job. And see, that was funny too, because that was a poem that did not make the final or her. So Sit Down Job specifically was a poem that did not necessarily make, well, didn't make the book. It wasn't even dead, not necessarily make the book. It was one of the poems I had to take out of the book in order to, when I was editing and revising the final manuscript. So therefore, then it became a song for the record. So that's how a lot of the record happened. Because there were pieces that were, some of them were pieces that could not be in the book. Some pieces were pieces inspired by pieces from the book. And that's how Tubman came to be. I decided to name the album Tubman, one, because I knew that a lot of the work in the book surrounded my maleness, but a lot of what I've learned to be, or learned how to be liberated, is through these wonderful Black women in my life. And that inspired the cover, that inspired the title of the album, because Harriet Tubman for me is like, if I had a dictionary, if I was to make a dictionary and put a picture by the word liberated to get people to understand what liberation is, it would be her picture.
Amen. Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
So that was. And I mean, that's for me, like I said, my art is so attached to my liberation, because for me, it's liberation is self-selected. It's nothing that you have to wait on someone to sign a sheet of paper to obtain, right?
Yeah, if you kind of coming from the self, and in your art, I mean, your art, both within the music and in Neckbone, I mean, it seems to me you're trying to prompt that exploration and that journey. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, that is thoroughly safe to say. The quote I usually give about Harriet Tubman is that she didn't run to freedom. She ran because she was free. Yeah. So her journey in emancipation was really aligning her body with what her mind and spirit already knew of her, of itself, that it was free and should be in spaces where it could be. And there was nothing that would satisfy her soul until she was also in a space where her body could be as free as her mind and her spirit. And this is what I'm really doing or want to do with the art. It's probably also why I am crazy with the fact that, oh, you're going to write a book and record an album at the same time. And because, I mean, any other, I think, sane person would at least do one and then the other.
Well, it's the using the things that you have to be able to tell the, I mean, just by you placing those two together for me, you know, as somebody who, you know, is enjoying both of them, it's the different ways, you know, you as an artist just trying to get that out in different ways. Let me explain a little bit further in this song, right? And or go back to the poem, and let's go in that way. Well, let me play Lil Lily track off off Tubman. I'm gonna play.
I love Lil Lily. Yeah,
I love that song. Let's play it. We'll chat about it a little bit after. I'm also gonna ask you about, you know, what is art after this. But we're gonna play that song now. This is Lil Lily, Avery R. Young, off the album Tubman. That's 100% dancing guarantee. You can't not dance to that song. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to speak directly to the podcast listeners. Even if you're in the car, you can pretty much do a whole dance in the car.
Yeah. Look, this is – so Lil Lily is a song about my mother, and the folklore around – that is that when my mother was carrying me, she's very, to this day, you know, somebody's gonna move and groove.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And she would do splits like James Brown and
oh,
all these things while she was like big belly with me. And so the song, so her song had to So her song, I had to thump like that.
Yeah.
It had to thump. So when I think about her, I think about like me, my dancing or just my, me liking to dance really is also like, it's me like my love of watching my mother dance and turn and spin and split like James Brown and things of that nature. So
that's where your parents, that's where your mama there set your destiny, right?
Yeah, that's how that works out. That's how
that works. When you're starting off like that, that's the way it's gonna go. So Avery, big question. You're an artist working a lot of different mediums, a lot of different forms. For you, what is art?
Whew, that's a big question. So let me figure out how to answer that one.
Yeah.
I know with me, the root of it always is the poetry. And what I am doing with poetry is I am using as many materials that I possibly can to express myself through poetry. That is what I am doing with my art, right? Is using sound, language to express a young man who is forever insisting on his liberation, forever insisting on being able to enter every room with all of his adjectives, all of his modifiers. And art for me is the ways in which it's the tool in which keeps the world honest.
Okay.
It is through art history can't lie.
Yeah.
So that's what art is to me, you know. Art is that entity that keeps the world honest. At the end of the day, a history book can be revised and it can omit truths and voices, but the art that is created during those times keeps those voices heard, relevant, and valuable. That's what art is for me.
Yeah. Thank you. I started the podcast about a year ago, and I've added questions and modified questions, and a couple of them have to do in particular with, your definition of art. And the next question related to that came about with the advance of the pandemic. And just kind of an open question for you. What's been the role of art for you in the pandemic, or the role of your art? I talked to a lot of artists, and some have struggled saying, man, I should be super productive because I got time. And others are like, screw doing art because the world's going to hell, or, everybody's having a different reaction. What do you see as the role of art in a pandemic?
I don't know if art has a role in the pandemic, but I do believe art is necessary during pandemic. It has been for me. But I as a writer have been able to remain in an alternative universe. Because as a creative, I've always been in the practice of alternative universes in the context of my body believes that I'm just in an extended art residency.
Yeah.
So I'm not having those problems with producing work and art and things of the nature. Certain projects, like a lot of my visual work stuff has been kind of on hold, but like the writing, the poems and the dreaming of songs and things of that nature, none of that has stopped. I'm, like I said, my body just think I'm able, I'm in a space where I'm able to create. So just keep creating, you know. I have to actually stop and rest.
Yeah.
I have to like stop and make myself go to sleep. You know, it is, which was so. At some point during Neckbone, I was doing so many things. The book was like, "Look, you gotta take time out for me." So I had to do a residency in order to figure. I mean, I did a self-imposed residency, and to finish the work of the book. Now it's like, okay, what book am I gonna work on today?
Yeah. Okay.
I just had this time. I'm not of the one who has the attitude that the world is going for shit, or I'm not defeated by the pandemic. Right. I'm from a people who, for me, have seen way worse than pandemic. You know, since 1619, there's been pandemic.
Yeah.
For me and mine. So that much of ways in which COVID-19 has stopped the desire to produce art has not hit my spirit yet. I have though been a bit more resistant to submitting work, because my work has always addressed these things that people are now addressing and want to create anthologies about and things of that nature. So I'm a bit more selective in where I'm submitting work or where that work would be presented, because I don't want to be a part of a trend in work on the back of such loss and devastation, right?
Right.
Because that's not what the work is about. No, that's not what, you know, that's not what my work is about. So.
Well, with your work, I mean, just to jump in, I mean, I heard you when you were saying that, and it was a powerful statement to me that, you know, your liberation as a person being tied up to those creative works. So that's been part, you know, that's been part of how you're doing your work. And when I was reading the Theaster Gates, you know, introduction, mm-hmm. About how, you know, he expresses quite clearly that there's the blackness that's imbued and the spirituality that's imbued in your work. So mm-hmm. if I'm hearing you right, you're saying this is what I've been doing. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to continue doing this. And whatever current, and I'm not trying to speak for you, but I mean, whatever the trend is now about, you know, with currently in the role of art and Black Lives Matters, it's like this is what you're continuing to do. Are you concerned about, you know, that getting tied up into something that's passing when you're actively working and creating with what you need to work? Is that part of it?
The That's the fire engine.
No, I'm calling it the Chicago, right? So I'm
mean. Yeah. Right. Chicago, yeah. On the west side, and I'm on the west side. On the west side of Chicago. So that's a whole other thing. And I was and I had chose the back porch just for lighting. I didn't know that this is gonna be mainly audio, but that's neither here nor there. My thing is, so I've walked past a lot of storefronts with Black Lives Matter signs in them, right? And then I've walked in those establishments and have seen no Black people in them. So I'm asking myself, oh, is that sign in your window to keep some motherfucker from busting it? Right. So for me, I have to continue to do the work that I'm compelled to do. Because it is that type of work that has sustained me before, during, and post this pandemic. I worship Nina Simone's Mississippi Goddamn, James Brown's I Don't Want Nobody to Give Me Nothing, Open Up the Door, I Get It Myself, Gil Scott-Heron's Home Is Where the Hatred Is, or Plan, or Aretha Franklin's version of To Be Young, Gifted, and Black. These are pieces of art. Lucille Clifton's Won't You Celebrate With Me? This thing I've shaped into a life. So there's art and artists who lay at, my art altar.
Yeah.
And this is what they did with their work, no matter what was going on in the world, no matter what was going on in their personal lives, So I'm compelled to just continue to work. What I am being more mindful though about is joining the machine, because I like to think that my work is against it. Right. There's my challenge to myself. Well, when I'm talking to students currently, I am mentoring four young artists through the Astors Rebuild Foundation over at the Stony Island Arts Bank. It's home to some archives. The one being the Johnson Publishing Library. Then there's a Library of Glass. There's a lot, some wonderful things inside this bank that these four young artists will engage and create work based off of. And one thing I was telling them is they should challenge themselves to make the work that could only come out of their hands. That is always my challenge to myself. I can only make the work. This work that I make can only come out of my hands. And that is, like I said, that's what I, in my hands, I still moving and grooving in spite of and despite of any and everything that I may be going through personally, the world outside my window, the hands are still moving and grooving and gonna do what they gotta do. Sometimes they don't need me.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where it comes from. I mean, that's a powerful statement. And I like that because it brings in, kind of like, you know, the authorship, right? The artist, like your hand, your voice, Avery, is what's important to help bring that out. You are the artist to produce that. And I think that does work against the grain. I think that is partly against the machine because, you know, sometimes there's a technical skill of like produce this thing that the culture, you know, wishes to be produced and just go ahead and do it. And there's less voice. It seems there's less voice in that.
I just wanted to say, I think a lot of times, especially during these times now, people are looking to art to fix a thing. And I never make that the assignment of my art to fix a thing.
Okay.
Don't look, my art can't be a teddy bear. You know what I'm saying? And if it's going to fix the thing, it's really a band-aid, right, over a gigantic wound. right. What fixes things is legislation. What fixes things are art can influence a shift in mentality that can work towards people then fixing things, but it's not the fix, right?
It's a conscious, more of a consciousness and more of a provocation.
Yes. It can definitely, there's been artwork that has moved me and changed, like I said, and changed my consciousness about, you know, things. But I do know at the end of the day, I'm not being the judge that's going to put another black or brown body into the judicial system. Right?
Right.
That's not my, the power of my art doesn't do that. Right? That's my, the power of my art is in spite of that, I create. So that is, you know, that's what I'm grappling with, you know, because a lot of that, I get resentful and people wanting that to be the assignment of the art, you know, so that makes it the art didn't pollute the ocean.
Yeah.
Right. You know that? Right. The art tells us that the ocean is polluted. And then we have to do the work to not pollute the ocean. You know what I'm saying?
I do. It's really helpful. And just kind of the approach and the role. And I think there is a great, you know, great question and potential debate is, yeah, you're saying, look, the answers aren't going to be, you know, produced in this here. You can be led to the answers, right? You can listen but you got some work to do on your own. Each one of us do. A couple more big questions. Okay. I was speaking to Avery R. Young, poet, singer, artist out of Chicago. A couple more big ones. Okay. Avery, what or who made you who you are?
Oh my goodness. That is what made me who I am. I guess from a standpoint of biology, my mom and my daddy. I will say the person who you're speaking to was designed by the person who you are speaking to.
Yeah.
So a lot of what makes or what has made me and the person that I am are decisions that I've made for myself as to how I will exist in this world. You know, I've made conscious decisions of what will anger me and what will not. What's important to me and what is not. And that has been influenced by conversations, books, food, people, smiles, tears. Yeah, that's been influenced by a lot of things, but ultimately, you know, I've designed me.
Yeah. Yeah. big question, Avery, why is there something rather than nothing?
Why is there something rather than nothing? Because something comes with thump.
All right.
Come on now.
That's the answer I've been waiting for. This is episode 40-something.
Come on now. Because something comes with the thump. And so that's why there's got to be something. Thump exists. Thump exists. And because thump exists, something must be there. Yeah, that's the only way thump happens. That's just like I said, I use the word thump a lot because it is, there are a couple of decisions made in the final mix of Little Lily, right? And I'm like, ugh. I wanted a thump. And I want it to sound like thump. And this is really just to tie in my analogy about, you know, there's something because there's a thump. I had to, one mix, listening to figure out the final mix, I asked that everything be muted except for the kick. And then I had him bring in the bass. And what ended up happening was the organ in that song comes in at the tail, like right at the end, right after the bridge.
Yeah.
And it may be minute to listeners and things of that nature, but it was something about the organ inside through the rest of the song to me that minimized the thump that I was looking for. And I had to kind of mute everything and start listening to it instrument by instrument to understand what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But that kick is the thump that was able to direct me to what would make what I wanted to hear what is heard. So like I said, that's the evidence of something is the thump.
Well, and I love that too, because when you said that, in the back of my head, the thump kept going in the back of my head from that song. I heard it and I know where it is, and thanks for placing it there.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. Hey, before we let you go, Avery, I wanted to just for you to let the listeners know, like I said, you do a lot of artwork. I again thank you. I love your pieces. I love the visual verses. The music is fantastic. I've watched some of your videos on YouTube. But without me trying to give it all away as far as where to find you, what can you let listeners know as far as where to find you? You know, if you got a project coming up or folks are in the city in Chicago, you know, whatever's going on, could you let us know?
Yes. Right now, I am one of four directors over at the Floating Museum. So you can, thefloatingmuseum.org is a space, and you can reach me on any social media platform from Instagram. That's Avery_R_Young. on Instagram and at BEBLK on Twitter. I am currently working on a play and a collection of experimental prose.
All right.
The play is based on the 1968 King riots on Chicago's West Side and the other work is centered around a hate crime of a queer man in Detroit, or queer people in Detroit, a couple of queer people in Detroit.
Yeah.
So, Friday birthday day, I did a performance and premiered a new song, which basically opened up the floodgates. So I'm going to put the Deacon Boy together and we got some old music to put out in the world.
All right. This is I'm excited by it. Thank and happy birthday. Happy birthday on
thank
Friday
you.
There.
I definitely,
part of me as I love art and I love the work that you do. And I like, for me, I like the exploration of it, just like in the sense of, like I said, some of the open-ended aspects of it, you know, like bringing up questions, and kind of jostling, you know, the viewer, the person who's, working with your art. And I certainly look forward to, you know, your new materials. Well, I got to tell you, I've been honored and blessed by it, being able to have your presence on this podcast. I wanted to convey that to you, and thank you for your time. And gosh, I really look forward to, you know, everything you put out that comes from yourself, Avery. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have a great day, and hey, continue your birthday weekend if you can.
I am.
Great talking with you, Avery.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Thank you so much.
You too.
Bye now. Bye-bye.
Water. Now they say.